Okay, take it away. Item B.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Michelle Culver with the Intergovernmental Ocean Policy Group in the FISH program. In January, we briefed you on the status of whale entanglements in the coastal Dungeness crab fishery, and we indicated at that time that there had been a third-party lawsuit that had been filed against the California Department of Fish and Wildlife on the same issues, and that lawsuit has been since settled in late March. In January, we also indicated our intent to apply for an incidental take permit under the Endangered Species Act, Section 10, and that we plan to have two workshops this spring to identify potential regulatory changes to reduce whale entanglements. So the purpose of the briefing today is to provide an update on the activities that have occurred and describe a proposed process and timeline. Your briefing materials include a summary sheet with four attachments. I'll just quickly hit the highlights. On the Center for Biological Diversity and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife Settlement Agreement, that included a closure this year on April 15th for their crab fishery that was approximately 5 months earlier than their scheduled season closure. And then beginning in 2020, that closure is to take effect on the 1st of April. The settlement agreement also included a deadline of May 15th of 2020 for California Fish and Wildlife to submit their incidental take permit application. It prescribes area closures and gear requirements for the crab fishery, as well as real-time aerial surveys to determine whale presence in the area of the crab fishery, and bi-weekly conference calls with the Center for Biological Diversity, and criteria to open and close the fishery based on whale presence in the area. We had some productive industry workshops in March and April, and with the Crab Advisory Board last week. Based on those discussions and the best management practices that have been developed through our whale working group process, we developed a preliminary regulatory proposal and a process and timeline, which is described in your attachment 4. I'll just quickly run through the regulatory proposal. It includes a gear requirement to keep the line taut and vertical. This is the line that extends from the buoy, which is at the surface, down to the pot, which is on the bottom. So the intent here is to not have a lot of excess line that is floating on the surface or in the water column that could potentially snag whales. So we don't intend to have any specificity in the regulatory language itself relative to maximum length of line, knowing that crab pots are set at different depths, anywhere extending from the coast out to about 60 fathoms of depth. So the depths can range from 10 fathoms to 60 fathoms. Beginning the 1st of May, we would implement a pot limit reduction by one-third. So those who have a current pot limit of 500 pots would reduce to 330 pots, and those with a pot limit of 300 pots would reduce to 200. Currently, we require a buoy tag on all pots. Those buoy tags are issued prior to the opening of the season, and each pot has one buoy and has to be marked with a buoy tag. The buoy tags differ each year in color, so you can't have last year's tag on your buoy this season, and they're individually numbered so that we can track to the individual fisher the buoy tags that have been issued to them. So the intent is with this pot limit reduction that would be effective on the 1st of May, we would require a new summer buoy tag that would be a different color than the one that had been issued pre-season. So that would help us enforce the pot limit reduction. And basically, after the 1st of May, you could not have pots out there that had the wrong buoy tag or no buoy tag on them. In addition, we...
I have a question, Mr. Baker, may I ask?
Go ahead, Kim.
We are choosing the 1st of May for the pot reduction. Obviously, that's to mitigate the risk of contact. In California, closure is going to be happening in the 1st of April, so that's, I guess, to mitigate the contact as well. What's the difference in the date? Does it have to do with the timing of whales in the various waters?
Yes, that's definitely a consideration. So all of the whale entanglements that have occurred in the crab fisheries along the West Coast, 85% of those occur off of California. So by far, they have the majority of the whale entanglements, and they are occurring earlier than what we see up off the Washington coast. The one other thing I would note is in Attachment 3, we show, based on the NOAA whale entanglement data, by month what the whale entanglements have been off the Washington, with Washington coastal crab gear, as well as unknown gear off of Washington. And I would note that the one entanglement that shows up in the month of April actually occurred on April 29th, so relatively late in the month. So we thought that by putting in the restriction from the 1st of May, we would likely be able to address the whale entanglement time frame of when those had occurred in the past.
Thank you.
The next item is to require a line marking. So we also heard from the NOAA whale responders that about half of the whales that have crab gear entangled, the buoy is missing, and the buoy, which has the buoy tag, is used to identify what fishery that gear came from. So they've indicated that it would be helpful to have the rope marked in a manner such that they could determine what fishery that gear came from. So not marked to the individual harvester, but at the fishery level. So a couple of ideas there were to paint a section of the rope a unique color. So Washington would pick a color. I'll use blue as an example. Oregon would have a different color, and so would California. So if there is a whale that's entangled and the buoy is missing, they could determine which state's fishery that gear came from. The other regulatory item is to allow the gear that does not have this new summer buoy tag on it to be brought in and reported. So if a harvester were to come across gear that did not have the buoy tag on it that did not belong to him, he could still bring that in and report that to enforcement, who would determine whose gear that belonged to, and would go and speak with that individual. So this allowance is something that we have at the end of the year now, a post-season ability to go and recover derelict gear. Our intent is to try and find a mechanism to be able to do that earlier. So gear that doesn't have the summer buoy tag on it is not left out in the ocean. So of all of these regulatory items, the only one that we could have in place this summer is the pot limit reduction. So we have not ordered buoy tags to put in a summer buoy tag program, and we still have some coordination to do with Oregon and California relative to the proposed line marking of the gear. The proposed process and next steps are also at the bottom of Attachment 4. Our plan is to file a CR 102 in the July-August timeframe. We would distribute that to crab fishery participants and schedule the rule briefing with a public comment opportunity for the Commission's meeting on October 18th and 19th. And have the rule adoption scheduled for January 2020.
Does that conclude your remarks, Michelle?
Yes, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions for Michelle Culver on whale entanglement?
This is Kehoe.
Go ahead, Bob.
Thank you. So I just Fish Committee received more of a comprehensive briefing yesterday, and I kind of dominated the conversation, and thank my fellow committee members for indulging me. First of all, I want to express my appreciation for the fact that the department is ahead of the game on this. The lawsuit in California and the settlement is very onerous to the fishery there, and probably could have been avoided to a certain extent if California was a little bit more proactive than they were. So I just want to start out by saying that and letting all the commissioners know that. The only issue that I brought up yesterday, and it was based on conversations with the president of the Westport Crab Association, had to do with the emergency, imposing an emergency regulation this year that would put into effect the pot limit restrictions beginning July 1. And so we had I raised my concerns, and I don't want to take up the time to go over those. I expressed those to staff and to the director, and I think they heard them, and just would ask that they consider some of the comments that I made and then also from the Westport Crab Association before they go ahead and an issue an emergency reg for a pot limit restriction this year. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Let me also add to Commissioner Keogh's compliments to the staff about getting out in front of this. This all does have a litigation risk, and the fact that we're being proactive, I think, is something that I would hope the Center for Biological Diversity folks would take into consideration as they think about Washington and Oregon on this particular issue. My question has to do with this emergency regulation that would take place on July 1st, and the summary sheet does not say that there's any motions to be made or adoptions here, but I guess that it would be good for the director to know whether or not the commission agrees with this emergency rule proposal that we see here on Attachment 4. And as Commissioner Keogh indicated, there was some discussion about it yesterday. There's been mixed feelings out there in the industry. I think it would be good if the director and the staff knew whether the commission endorses moving forward with their entire plan here that includes another consideration by the commission in October, and a final rule adoption in January, and applying for an incidental take permit with the federal government in 2020, all of which, again, are signals to those folks that the state of Washington is not just sitting back and doing nothing. I guess my question then would be for Commissioner Kehoe and the rest of the commissioners, whether or not the commission is in the mood to endorse this emergency rule for July 1st. Commissioner Kehoe, you indicated that you'd like the director to take into consideration all the comments that they've heard and maybe contact those folks again. Is it your opinion, Commissioner Kehoe, that you're okay with this as a signal to the staff that the whole commission might be okay with this idea, or are you concerned about the lack of maybe a formal justification of an emergency right now on July 1st?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner McIsaac. I mean, so I guess, you know, maybe just a little bit of more background about my objections. I mean, I think if you look at attachment 3, we're obviously we can't put in the rule, emergency rule in effect May or June. So we're looking as an option. And I guess, so my concern or my issue was, well, if you look at attachment 3, you have one confirmed whale entanglement.
Hold on a minute, Bob. Who's ever shuffling papers, that results in us not being able to hear the speaker. So that's what the mute button's for. Go ahead, Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, so you know, that was one issue. And to folks in the industry that I spoke with, they thought maybe an emergency reg might be this year would be a little bit excessive in terms of risk adversity, you know, in terms of what CBD might or may not do in terms of a lawsuit. You know, so, and then of course August, I mean, we have two confirmed Washington gear entanglements in the last 10 years, but certainly there's more, it looks like there's more, you know, unknown gear category. So my, and then, as from an industry perspective, you know, many people and you people up on the commission for a while have heard me talk about this, about that commercial fishermen are business people and they make business decisions about fisheries that they are involved in, you know, in advance. And so, you know, absent a compelling reason to institute an emergency reg, that goes counter to the idea of the need for people to plan their businesses accordingly. And, you know, hey, sometimes emergencies arise, sometimes run sizes are such that it interferes with people's plans. But so what that was kind of the nature of my objection. And based on my conversations with industry. So one thing that I ask the director and the staff to consider is, well, rather than have a July 1 closure, maybe postpone that to August 1st, where we see some more evidence of at least more unknown gear entanglements, which suggests that whales are more common in our area off the Washington coast in August as opposed to July, or June for that matter. So, I mean, as far as, you know, to get to your question, Commissioner McIsaac, I don't know. I mean, certainly I'd let other commissioners weigh in on this. You know, I'm comfortable in delegating this certainly to the director and staff, you know, kind of the weigh the options, weigh the risks associated, take into consideration. So I don't know if we need, I would invite commissioners maybe that have a similar viewpoint or a different viewpoint to express it now, I guess.
Commissioner Baker, I have a question.
Go ahead, Commissioner Thurber.
The gear classification, I'm assuming, comes from NOAA as they work with these entanglements. So if it's classified as unknown, is that because the buoy is missing? Generally, do we know?
So if the... if it says the Washington coastal crab gear, then that means they were able to determine that it was the Washington coastal crab fishery that the gear belonged to. In addition to that, they have another gear category that's specific to net gear, so gill nets or floating nets, trawl nets, that they're able to determine that's the type of gear that has entangled the whale. In the case of unknown gear, that means that they were not able to disentangle the whale or get close enough to the whale to determine whether it fell into one of those other categories, whether it was either net gear or, in this case, pot gear.
Okay, so it could be net gear as well, then, in these unknowns.
Yes. The other thing that I will note, though, is that what is displayed on the graph are the confirmed whale entanglements where there was a NOAA responder was able to confirm not only the entanglement, but in the case of the coastal crab gear, what fishery the gear came from, and that NOAA does not have a definitive estimate of the expanded number of entanglements, but they have been clear that what has been confirmed is likely a fraction of what is actually occurring.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This is Commissioner Grayville.
Go ahead, Commissioner Grayville.
Looking at attachment 3, and we look at the unknown gear, and I think cumulatively, the unknown gear is accounted for more entanglements than our Washington crab fishery. And I'm curious to see if there would be a way to explore an aggressive effort to remove the unknown gear, whether that's a line that can be retrieved by either one of the operators of the crab fishery or our enforcement division, and what the potential impact would be of removing the unknown gear. As Michelle mentioned, they are encouraged to retrieve the unknown gear and then report it if it can be identified. However, I think maybe with an aggressive effort of removing unknown gear, we could eliminate the majority of the entanglements that we're seeing off the coast. This is something that I just mentioned as the potential for further inquiry and examination, and it may provide the kind of relief that we need to avoid litigation. And that's just a comment, and if that's a reasonable approach to take.
I have a question about Grable's comment. So you said unknown gear, but it sounded like maybe you were referring to derelict gear.
Thank you, Kim. And it is derelict in that the buoys have been lost, and but there are ways to retrieve that. I assume that there's either, you know, a long pot line that's still visible on the surface, or in the, as I believe Michelle indicated, that it's differentiated from the gill nets and long lines and other things that the whales can get entangled in. And again, this is just a question to see if there's potential of more aggressive action to remove quote-unquote derelict gear or gear that can be retrieved on the surface. And I think you're right, and a lot of that would be considered derelict if the buoy's missing.
Thank you, Commissioner Graybill. My apologies for not being clear. The unknown gear is where NOAA responders are not able to determine the kind of gear that is entangling the whale. So it's a situation of where a whale entanglement was reported. NOAA responder responded, was able to confirm that the whale was entangled, and as displayed in attachment 3, able to confirm that it was a humpback whale that was entangled. However, the whale either swam away or dove too deep, and they were not able to get close enough to the whale to determine exactly what kind of fishing gear was wrapped around the whale. They could just tell that there was gear on the whale, what kind of whale it was, but they couldn't tell what type of fishing gear was on the whale. So it's not that we have unknown fishing gear that's fishing. It's that the unknown gear was what was entangling the whale.
Thank you for the clarification.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac.
Just one little comment on the unknown gear, and then maybe a comment on moving forward. You know, the unknown gear could be of a variety of different things, but most likely in off of the state of Washington, you can guess at what that unknown gear probably is. It might be possible for some gear to be drug up by a whale from Oregon. To have some drift net gear on a whale, they'd have to be dragging it all from California. So I think we probably can guess what the highest probability of the entanglement is when they never did see the whale or the gear to confirm anything. But in terms of moving forward, I think the biggest benefit of this entire discussion is to demonstrate to those who might litigate that we're doing something. And so all of this process that's described that has occurred is important, I think, to demonstrate we're doing something. And considering these alternatives for 2020, for the specificity of reducing pot limits and requiring buoy tags and line marking and all of this stuff is, you know, maybe 80% to 90% of demonstrating that we're serious about doing something. And whether or not there's an emergency rule for a pot reduction on July 1st or August 1st is not the major part that I think would be impressive to these potential litigants that the state of Washington is serious about this. An incidental take permit, as discussed yesterday from the federal government, takes years to get. And so this is important to do something while we're waiting for the formality of the federal process. So as one commissioner anyway, I guess I think it would be a thing to signal to the folks that are potential litigants that the commission endorses this process moving forward. As we said, we're thankful to the staff for trying to get out in front of this, and that's all very significant in terms of trying to do something. And if the rest of the commission is okay with that, I think we ought to contact the Center for Biological Diversity. We've been told they contacted us, which is a way of saying is sending a signal to something. So I think it would be good to let them know all of these things that are going on. And if the director, after hearing from the actual crab fishing folks and talking to them about the risk of litigation and what the impacts of their businesses are, ends up choosing July 1st or August 1st. I don't think. I'm not somebody who objects to any emergency rule this whole year. That's a minor part of the whole business. The biggest part is, I think, that the commission endorses doing something here and letting everybody know that that's the case.
This is Commissioner Thorburn, if I could make a comment. I agree. I certainly endorse the work that staff is doing, moving us forward, being proactive. In regards to the emergency rule, I basically support the idea of moving forward with that. I agree that it's just a piece of it. But as I look at the graph, more than half of the humpback whale entanglements do occur or have been documented between July and September. It seems like it's doing something that might be protective of humpback whales. Right away. The idea of it being different between July and August, I don't feel real strongly about it. I respect the conversations that Commissioner Kehoe's been having, but would note that just those 3 months do comprise more than half of the documented entanglements.
Is there any further discussion on whale entanglements? Michelle, do you feel that you've got...
I just want to echo, I think, Commissioner McIsaac, leaving aside the emergency reg for now, I think Commissioner's McIsaac's idea of a letter coming from the commission signed by the chair... endorsing the WDFW's recommendations for moving forward, I think that's a good idea, and I would support such a letter.
Vice Chair Baker?
Is this Mr. Freymeyer?
This is Mr. Warren.
Oh, hi. Go ahead, Ryan.
Thank you. I will offer my thought. I think that we have been in pretty regular contact with the Center of Biological Diversity. We continue to stay in touch through Michelle with our AG's office. I think at this time, watching the events along the coast relative to the whale entanglement in the crab fisheries, I'm not sure that a letter is extremely beneficial to enter into the record right now. I think that the actions that we will consider through the emergency regulation to try to protect the entanglement from occurring this year is the action that the center is really looking for and what they're striving for all of the coastal states to try to achieve. So I hope that you think about that as well.
Vice Chair Baker, this is Commissioner Holzmiller.
Go ahead, Commissioner Holzmiller.
Yeah, I have to kind of fall alongside with Bob. I think we need to be pretty careful on emergency things. The one thing that does intrigue me, though, is marking the shots or the rope. And that might be something I'd have to talk with the industry and see what kind of financial burden that would be. But I think it might be a phased-in deal or something like that. But I think that would maybe help and take care of some of the unknown to find out what it truly is, what the unknown gear is, if it is crab gear or other things. So something to consider.
Any further comments on on, well, okay, so we've given different advice on the question of a letter to the CBD. Is there any further discussion on that? I don't want to leave staff wondering what they're supposed to do.
Commissioner, this is Smith here. I would follow staff's recommendation. I believe they're the closest to it. They've been in, well, not daily, but, you know, regular contact with CBD, and I would follow their guidance.
This is Commissioner Graybill, and I agree with the comments from Commissioner Smith. They've been on top of this. Commissioner Kehoe has voiced his appreciation for getting out ahead of this. They have a much better understanding of the relationship we have with the center right now, and I believe that their recommendations are based on that experience and conversations with the center.
This is Commissioner Thorburn, and I also agree with not sending the letter and supporting staff in the efforts that they continue to undertake. I would note both the Fish Committee has discussed this in depth, and we've had two briefings on it. So, and these are public meetings, so our engagement with this issue is well documented.
Any further comments?
Commissioner McIsaac, let me just first of all compliment you, Madam Vice Chair, because it is good to resolve these kind of things and not leave the staff hanging as to where the commission was at on this. And I think the most important thing here is that the leadership at the Center of Biological Diversity, the folks that would be judging whether or not they think litigation is needed to try to move this forward, and what the time scale would be and the difficulties of litigation, that they not be confused about whether or not we are doing nothing or we're doing something. And if that can be verbally communicated, the main thing is that they do understand the depth of all of that. So I guess I fall in the camp of, as long as there is that kind of communication, I don't know that there's a necessity of putting it in writing, but I'd be interested in Commissioner Kehoe's thinking on this.
Commissioner Kehoe, do you care to comment on any of the proceedings?
Well, I was thinking that if the letter would be helpful, that would be good. But, you know, I will take Ron's comments. I will follow his lead on this. If they don't think it would be particularly helpful, then we don't need to bother sending a letter. But I do appreciate, I think it was a good idea, Commissioner McIsaac, to raise that and let staff respond. So I'm good.
Okay, and just my only comment on this is that I agree with the majority of the commission that a letter would be premature, because what we would be saying is, sort of, here's what we're thinking about doing. That's being communicated directly with the center. I think the focus on this is the same as it seems like in this agency, what, you know, pretty much whatever we do, we run lists of litigation. I just want to make the comment that is obvious that still needs to be made, that our approach to this isn't simply to avoid litigation, it's to prevent whale entanglement, and that's our real goal. And I think that the work that staff has done, and I'm summarizing all of our concern on this, is that what we really want to do is set up a system where we mitigate to the extent possible whale entanglement. And as with everything that we do, we are also trying to be cognizant and respectful and of the industries involved. And we'll just go from here and keep us posted if there's no further questions or comments on this.
Well said.
Thank you. All right. Well, then.